from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll get a preview of an art show that benefits undocumented youth.
I'll find out about what the University of Indianapolis Theater Program has planned for this spring.
And I'll find out how the Arts Council is celebrating the Indy 500 and much more. And we'll have that arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Indiana Undocumented Youth Alliance is putting together a month-long art show in May to raise money to fund scholarships for Indiana's undocumented youth. Sharon Gamble invited Alliance volunteers Sarah Fox and Patricia Alonso to tell her about their organization and about the new art show.
So I want to talk first about what is the Center for Interfaith Cooperation and how did you get connected?
The Center for Interfaith Cooperation is located on 42nd and Michigan Street. They have various organizations there, such as the Muslim Alliance, and just a lot of organizations that come together and talk about interfaith issues. Mm-hmm. I was actually an AmeriCorps member for 2 years, and that was our location where the AmeriCorps members would meet. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I got to meet the director and how I got to meet some of the other organizations there and just kind of connect with them. And they provided the space for the Undocu Challenges Art Gallery.
Fantastic. And next, defining who our partners are, what is Indiana Undocumented Youth Alliance?
The Indiana Undocumented Youth Alliance is a youth-led community organization. We kind of have two angles, empowerment and education, and we want to empower young people who are undocumented immigrants in Indiana to achieve higher education. And then our other aspect that we work on is working to educate the community on policies that affect the undocumented community and hopefully have an impact on creating more just and humane local laws and also educating people on what's happening statewide, nationwide, as far as what impacts undocumented immigrants.
That is a tall order, a wonderful and broad mission. How do you find people? What kind of networks? And are you using social media a lot or going through churches? Or how do you find both people who can help you with the cause and be volunteers, but also people who will benefit and who need to hear your messages?
Sure. So Indiana Undocumented Youth Alliance, it started as a space where a lot of friends were just finding a space to vent and share their stories. So it's really a safe environment. We don't have a physical space, but just a safe environment to come and support each other. We're our own cheerleaders. And so a lot of us are friends, but we do try to outreach to people in the community in different ways. So we go to different events, such as Fiesta. And we go to other events such as She Hive, who's actually one of our partners for the art show. And we just do, like, tabling and outreach in that manner. Mm-hmm. Social media is great. We've actually, I believe we have now, like, 80 more new views. And just people are spreading the word through social media.
Mm-hmm. So talk to me about, because a lot of our listeners will be intrigued, but have never had the experience of being an undocumented youth. So have you define Undocu challenges, because you actually have a definition, which is great.
Yeah, so to speak a little bit to what it means to be undocumented, there are different ways that people who are living in the United States may come to identify or be identified as undocumented. Mm-hmm. Some various routes would be arriving in the U.S. on a visa, but overstaying your visa to become undocumented, or perhaps arriving in the United States without a visa to begin with, and living without that legal status,
mm-hmm.
Or lawful status. And so we've identified for the art show some of the various challenges that come with being undocumented, which we've said are identity loss, family separation, employment exploitation, stereotyping, the narrative in the media, lack of driver's licenses, being ineligible for in-state or resident tuition at Indiana schools, issues with health care ineligibility, language barriers, political oppression, and the list can go on and on. There's a lot of things that are very personal to folks who are undocumented. They may find that some of these challenges don't apply to them, and they may have other more personal experiences that have been challenging for them.
And chances are pretty good almost nobody experiences just one
right.
of that
mm-hmm.
list.
Right.
It's the whole package.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's complicated by whatever family you're living with, mm-hmm. whether it's your family of origin or you came over and are living with friends who are now de facto family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the idea of having an art show to raise money for – well, I'll let you say what the money is for.
So again, with one of our missions for the Indiana Undocumented Youth Alliance is to empower undocumented youth to continue and pursue a higher education. And because of some, for example, HB 1402, which asks undocumented students to pay out-of-state tuition,
mm-hmm.
They sometimes have difficulty paying for school. And so we are raising funds. We aim to raise $1,000 scholarships for the next semester,
mm-hmm.
just so these students can have maybe at least access to at least one class, or it can help them financially in that way. So that's kind of why we're also doing the art show, mainly to empower individuals to share their stories, their testimonies, and also to raise the funds for the scholarships.
And the funds will be raised through the sale of the art.
Correct.
Yeah. As we're having this conversation, it's still a full month before the month-long art exhibit starts. But can you tell us about some of the work that you know about already, some of the pieces?
Yeah. So we've had a lot of different artists reach out already. We've had from across the state and then all different kinds of medium that the artists work with. We are going to feature an artist from Kentucky. Well, I think his main base is Kentucky, but Steve Pavey, he's a photographer, an activist, an artist, and he has been working with communities since some of the first anti-immigrant laws in 2011. He's been working alongside communities, and he was actually at a civil disobedience in Indiana in 2011 that was protesting the HB 1402 and SB 590, and he documented, photographed those events. So we're excited to have Steve and his photography featured in the art show. And I say featured just because he's a guest from out of state, but we have a lot of artists from around Indiana, and that includes painting, more photography, mixed media. We recently had someone reach out who creates sculptures. So we have a lot of opportunities for different types of artwork. One of our committee members who's working on the art show, Isabella Flores, she creates prints, so there will be printmaking. There's a lot of variety, so we're excited to see everything that comes to our art show.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have a screening and a panel that's going to go on May 13th. Tell me about Dreams Over Hate.
So Dreams Over Hate is the name of a video that was created based on that very action I was just talking about, the civil disobedience action in 2011, when five students, undocumented students, were arrested at the state house in Indiana. And so it's a film that goes over what happened and their stories and why that action was necessary. And then it's going to be 5 years since then, and so we're excited to celebrate the accomplishments, but also, you know, looking at what has changed and what hasn't changed since
sure.
then. The fact that the undocumented students are still required to pay out-of-state tuition, so those things haven't changed. So the panel is going to be bringing back at least some of the young people who were arrested, we're hoping to include some of their family in the panel to get their perspective, because you can imagine the impact that would have, you know, beyond just the person themselves. So we're excited. That's going to be a time to reflect back on that action and where we've come in 5 years. We're hoping to put together a writing workshop that would be an opportunity to educate the community on how to write letters to the editor or write letters to their to public officials. That's where we're at right now with that. But we're really excited to have the different events every Friday, and we're trying to kind of incorporate different elements of the Indiana Undocumented Youth Alliance. And so hopefully kind of creating a writing workshop that will empower and educate the community on how to do that type of writing, kind of seeing that the, because we want the artwork that's in the show to communicate the challenges of being undocumented, to give people a chance to share their story through art, and then we're kind of exploring other things that tie into that. So being able to write an effective letter to the editor or letter to a public official, that's the idea right now.
Absolutely. Good. Great goal. Patricia, how did you get involved with this alliance?
So I got involved with Indiana Undocumented Youth Alliance in 2012 when it first started. We were actually all in a friend's house, and we just had a meeting where we brainstormed a lot of ideas, and it was very exciting because we knew what we wanted, and we wanted to make change, and we wanted to create, again, the safe environment for us to vent. And that's how I initially started, and mainly because my husband is undocumented, and a lot of my friends and people that I care about are undocumented. And so I wanted to be able to support in a way with however I could. And that's kind of why I decided to join in. And a lot of our members, we don't get paid for this. This is just our volunteer work.
Sure.
It's just a passion of ours. And we're all very, again, passionate and excited to do this work. So you can probably see that throughout a lot of the work. And again, we're very excited for just the art gallery, especially because we know that it's very difficult for some individuals to be vocal, either because they're introverted, like one of our own members, or because they have fear. And so this is a wonderful space to create that empowerment and allow them to share their stories, either vocally or through art. And so this is why I also joined the Alliance, just because I think it's so beautiful how we can come together as family and just help each other out and, again, be our own supporters and just cheering us on and also just doing amazing work in the community.
Yeah, yeah, and you've created your own community in this way.
Yes.
And Sarah, how did you get involved?
I have a similar story. I was also there since the beginning of the organization, and I also am in the organization to support my loved ones, friends, and see change happen in Indiana. It's a tough state to live in if you're undocumented, and I want to, as a U.S. citizen, someone who can vote, I want to be making sure that I'm hearing the voices of those who cannot and participating in ways to make change. So, yeah, it's for my friends, it's for my family, for people I care about a lot. So that's really how I got involved, was just to be a part of some organization that was making a difference in Indiana.
Sharon Gamble with Indiana Undocumented Youth Alliance, that's IUYA, volunteers Sarah Fox and Patricia Alonzo. Their art show takes place at the Center for Interfaith Cooperation through the month of May. Funds from the sales of art will help provide 5 scholarships for undocumented students. You can learn more on Facebook if you just look for UNDOCU, that's UNDOCU, Hoosier. Again, UNDOCU, Hoosier. Look at that on Facebook and you'll find some information, or you can send your email questions to undocuchallenges@gmail.com, undocuchallenges@gmail.com.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. The University of Indianapolis Theater Department will be presenting the Laramie Project later this month. Travis DiNicola sat down with director James Lieger to find out more.
James, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to see you.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Really excited about talking about this production of the Laramie Project. I think it's really intriguing what you're doing with it at University of Indianapolis. Before we get into that, though, give me just a little bit of background on the story. Many people will remember it, but it is quite a dramatic and traumatic story.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons, and sadly enough, this happened back in 1998. So the fact that it is still just as relevant today is frightening, mm-hmm. but also, you know, given the opportunity to have this voice about this. Matthew Shepard was a young man who was at the University of Wyoming. He was a freshman, and he had gotten, in essence, kidnapped and unfortunately taken out, and he was beaten, tied to a fence post, and left for dead. And he was found, but even at that point, there were not a whole lot of vital signs, but he lived in the hospital for another 3 days. Mm-hmm. And that's really when kind of the whole movement started, because word started to get out.
And the reason being that it was a hate crime, that because he was gay or perceived as gay.
Yes, he was gay, and these two guys had an issue with that. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that really brought me to this piece too, as well, is not only for our LGBT community, but our community as a whole. Mm-hmm. I've told our students that, you know, this is about hate. This is about a hate crime, and that human beings are capable of doing these things. This particular story happens to be about Matthew Shepard, mm-hmm. and it's a very strong image in terms of a young gay man and this happening to him, but it's happening in all parts of our society.
When this play was created originally, it was done so through a series of 200-some interviews of people living in Laramie?
Yes. The Moises Kaufman and the Tectonic Theater Company, they basically went out and canvassed Laramie and interviewed everybody that they possibly could, and even at that point didn't know what they were going to do with it. Mm-hmm. And he has a very stylistic approach to how he creates theater, and it's this whole kind of tectonic way. So in the play itself, they're not called scenes, they're called moments.
Okay. And it's not a traditional play in that there's an act one or act two, or that there's a specific storyline with actors playing individual characters. It's many, many voices.
Correct.
That are being shared by a small number of actors.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the whole idea is that there are what are considered 8 Tectonic Theater members, mm-hmm. and they are listed in the show as themselves, and they speak as themselves, but then they transition into the variety of characters that they interviewed. Mm-hmm. So one of the things, so it's a very simplistic type theater, mm-hmm. and I have approached it very much with my students that way, of I want them to empower themselves that they were the actors who went out and did this.
This has got to be a great challenge for your theater students as actors.
It is.
I mean, there's really no set here. I mean, they're being asked to not just deal with difficult material, but with many, many characters and many perspectives.
Right.
And very quickly.
On top of which, of course, you know, my students all know that I love to, you know, throw things at them and challenge them even further. Mm-hmm. I'm going even further with it, where we're actually putting the audience on stage.
You have thrown a lot at them.
Yes.
So let me understand this, because I had heard about this, that this is how you were staging it. But so obviously it's got to be a small audience for each show, for each night that you're producing it. But they're actually on the stage with the actors, or very close, in close proximity to the actors?
Correct. And it's what I'm calling a reverse thrust in the round.
Okay.
Which basically means that the play is taking place on 3 sides of the audience.
Okay.
In addition to in the middle of the audience.
So if you picture a C on its side, maybe,
yes.
And the letter C, and that the audience is in that sort of open space,
right.
Surrounded by the actors.
So the idea is that we can use dramatic effect in terms of staging things that are far right, far left, mm-hmm. it's not going to be just sitting back in a theater seat, cushy theater seat, and just kind of looking straight ahead.
They're
going
to be in your face.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And and what's great about that is the audience that's behind them. That part of the audience is also, they're watching that audience move mm-hmm. with the stuff, so that the audience actually becomes part of the rhythm of the piece.
How do you rehearse something like that?
It's been interesting, and we're kind of in the middle of that. And as a matter of fact, as we speak tonight, we've got a rehearsal. Some of the students are mm-hmm. somewhat confused and concerned, but it's very, I've pushed them very much in terms of an organic way of looking at it, which is, you know, this is you. This is a story. And these kids, I do have to say, I have never seen students more passionate about a piece. And that's the kind of theater, I think, in my older age that I'm mm-hmm. finding I just love doing.
Sure.
And the impact that I've just seen that this material has had with our students has been phenomenal.
I've had some great discussions have come out.
Oh, amazing. Mm-hmm. And it's opened up conversations.
Had many of the students known of the play or known of Matthew Shepard beforehand?
That's a good question.
You know, 18, 19, 20.
I don't think a lot of them did. They know the Laramie Project more from the controversy and the thing, you know.
Yeah.
But truly, once we really started to get into the material, they just ate it up.
Yeah. And I mean, potentially a couple of them could have even been born after it happened.
Right.
But,
right.
You know, or certainly were infants or very young at the time. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the elements that kind of kicked this into gear, which is also part of this production, mm-hmm. or well, not part of the production, but in association with, there is a documentary that is called Matt Shepard Is My Friend, or Is a Friend of Mine.
Mm-hmm.
And that documentary just came out on Netflix.
Okay.
And it's the director is Michelle, and I don't want to get her last name wrong. It's Husway.
Okay.
And she was a friend of mm-hmm. Matt's, and she was a film student when all this happened. And she has finally come back around, and she revisited Laramie, interviewed people. She's created this amazing documentary that we contacted her. We got the rights to do a screening at the University of Indianapolis, and she is actually going to be coming in to speak.
What a great experience for your students.
Oh, yeah. Amazing, amazing experience.
Before we wrap this up, I do want to go back to one thing. So how many people can you get on the stage?
Typically it's done with 8 people, and there's over 70 mm-hmm. different characters.
But the audience?
In terms of the audience.
Yeah, yeah.
The audience, it's only like 80, I think it's 88.
Okay, so very intimate. Yeah,
yeah, very, very intimate. And hopefully we'll be able to get everybody in. And if we have to add a couple of shows, well, then, you know.
The worst things could happen.
Yeah.
Well, best of luck with it and to your students as well. Thanks so much for coming into Heart of the Matter today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Travis DiNicola with UIndy Theater Department's James Lieger. The Laramie Project will take place in the Studio Theater in Esch Hall on the UIndy campus. And there's a free preview on April 21st, and then it opens on the 22nd and runs through the 30th. You can get more information at uindy.edu. UIndy.edu. Travis?
Sharon.
You know they say only 2 things in life are certain?
Yes. Oh.
Death and taxes?
It is that time, isn't it?
I have something for each of those items on today's calendar that we call
What'll we do? The death and taxes edition?
The death and taxes
edition. What do you got, Sharon?
Well, don't forget there are lots of events going on around the city for the Before I Die Festival.
Oh.
I'm just saying, you know,
yeah.
With tax day just mm-hmm. around the corner. That's Friday, April 15th, for those of you who are hiding your head in the sand. But seriously, a festival for the living about dying is how they're billing the Before I Die Festival. There's visual art and poetry and death cafes, which is not what you think it is,
mm-hmm.
and film and books and conversations and panels and things you can do and things you can talk about. Find out lots more at tinyurl.com/BIDFIndy. So tinyurl.com/BIDFIndy.
Hmm. Well, with all the death and taxes, it sounds like people may need some sort of retreat. And so I'm going to suggest that you check out Crown of Eternity. It's a sound journey with gongs, bells, and singing bowls.
Wow.
A cosmic journey of sonic bliss for us to retune, reset, and recharge. And you can bring a yoga mat or a blanket for extended relaxation at the floor. On the floor, what is this? Well, it's at the Athenaeum. It's coming up at the Athenaeum, and it's going to be on April 24th from 3 to 5 p.m. And it's a couple who are touring, a husband and wife, Galena and Mike Camburo, and they specialize in providing sound healing experiences. And they do this at yoga festivals and all sorts of other places. And so it's a performance, but it is also meditation as well. And they do ask that you bring a yoga mat or a blanket or something, and because you will be actually on the floor for a long period of time. And so it's easy to get cold down there. There will be chairs available for people who cannot sit. And they did send...
Sorry.
A reminder that just to let people know, bring something, bring layers, and that they'll be sitting on the floor for about a half an hour and lying down for about 1.5 hours. It's sort of an experiential yoga concert, again, at the Athenaeum, coming up on April 24th, a sound journey. That should help you forget about your taxes.
We get way off the beaten path on our calendar, don't we?
It's going to be an interesting show, yep.
Hey, don't forget there are lots of arts events you can still catch as part of Butler Arts Fest. Learn more at butlerartsfest.com. But a couple of them, you heard Travis's interview last week about the Peacemakers, the James Aikman world premiere. Not just concert, but event with voices and chamber orchestra and inspiring words and so much more. Tiempo Libre is performing at the Schrott Center for the Arts this Saturday afternoon. Again, learn more at butlerartsfest.com about all of those associated events.
A lot of great theater going on right now. One very, very funny show, Spotlight Players, is producing Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike. Christopher Durang, a great Christopher Durang comedy. It is just a lot of fun. If you know Christopher Durang's work, you know how absurd and silly it is and how much fun he has. Sometimes parodying some Chekhov in there as well. And this is going on, Spotlight Players, taking place at the theater at the Fort, at Benjamin Harrison Fort. And it should be a lot of fun. It's going on now through the 17th.
You know... Since we're talking about death and taxes, and you mentioned a retreat a minute ago, or maybe you need respite from death and taxes, think of some other cool things that start with the letter R, and you will be in the right mood to get your ticket for Indie Reads Alphabet Affair, which is, gosh, you better get your ticket soon, because the event is Saturday, April 23rd at the Indianapolis Hyatt Regency Hotel in the Cosmopolitan Ballroom, and you're invited to come as something representing the letter R. It will be a raucous, random racing-themed party, and they always get an amazing, amazing menu that is themed around the sponsoring letter. So indiereads.org is where you can find out more and get tickets. They can still get tickets, right, Travis?
People can still get tickets, awesome. And I want to add one thing about this.
What's that?
Anyone who participates, who comes to the event, is going to be part of setting a Guinness World Record.
R for record.
It's true, R for record. And we will be singing the alphabet at the beginning of the evening. And shockingly enough, there is not an official record for number of people doing that at the same time. And we're going to set it.
Sweet.
We're working with Guinness to make it happen. So you could be a part of history, Sharon.
That is fantastic. I love that.
Isn't that cool?
I love it very much. She doesn't have a single R in her name, but Lois Maine Templeton will be at the JCC on Sunday, April 24th for an artist reception. Of her exhibit. The reception is from 1:30 to 4, and part of the reception will have Lois in conversation with Jennifer Complo McNutt, who's a longtime curator at the Idlejorg. The reception is free, light refreshments will be offered, and a wonderful time is guaranteed for all. So Lois Maine Templeton putting in an appearance at Indy with her exhibit at the JCC Sunday, April 24th.
Very cool. Hey, I mentioned some great theater going on. Butler Theater is presenting an original work, Portal 1812, that runs through the 17th. And the description of this is pretty wild. It's a 65-minute dynamic fusion of physical and spoken performance and interactive gallery installation within the real-time sonic and visual experience of the gaming realm. Yes. So basically, the cast portrays a group of 8 participants selected from millions to join the Space Capture Program. And if I tell you any more, well... You'll still want to go. But it sounds like a lot of fun, and it is also part of what Cher mentioned before, the Butler Arts Fest.
And it is partly inspired by the 1812 Overture, just in case that gets lost in there. But it goes on a far journey, apparently.
Yes, it does.
Hey, if you don't know about this yet, I want to call it to your attention. Indianapolis Foundation, which is part of CICF, has created two Benjamin Franklin funds in celebration of the 100. We've got a lot of centennials and bicentennials going on now. Indianapolis Foundation is 100 this year, and they're creating these two funds. One of them has $100,000 based on 100 people giving $1,000, and the other one has $100,000. I'll let you do the math, based on people giving $100 apiece. And what you're doing is you're not benefiting anything in Indianapolis right now or even in your lifetime.
Probably.
Wait, you're going to live a really long time,
know,
huh? Okay, so the idea is that they're going to set aside this money, and this is based on something Ben Franklin did shortly before his death in 1790 for the cities of Boston and Philadelphia. He put funds aside with the idea that the funds would be used for public works and invested and untouched. And in his case, it was for 200 years. In Indianapolis Foundation's case, it'll be 100 years. So in 2116, they're expecting to have about $5 million.
Wow.
Annually granted from the proceeds of those funds, because they're going to put them away, compound interest,
that's
all those
cool
things you hear about in Pete the Planner's column goes into place. So if you Google Ben Franklin Funds Indianapolis, you can participate and dream big for 100 years from now.
That's a very cool thing to do.
Yeah.
More theater. Actors Theater of Indiana is producing The Unnecessary Farce. There is no such thing as an unnecessary farce, as far as I'm concerned, but they're doing this at the Studio Theater up in Carmel, the Center for the Performing Arts, and it basically is a play with a lot of farcical misunderstandings of who's who and whose hotel room is who, or motel room, actually. Yes, some confusion about that. A lot of fun, very funny play, Unnecessary Farce, and that is opening the end of the month, April 29th, running through May 15th for Actors Theater of Indiana.
Something else wildly entertaining, the Indianapolis Men's Chorus Spring Concert Geronimo showcases the hits of three Broadway legends, Jerome Robbins, Jerome Kern, and Jerry Herman, hence the name Geronimo.
Geronimo, I like it.
The concerts are this Friday, April 15th. Get your taxes filed and go celebrate that. And Saturday, April 16th at 8 o'clock at Marion University Theater. You can find out more online. And the concert will also feature Claire Wilter and Ann Beck, stars of the Indianapolis stage. So, yeah.
Civic Theater is producing Fiddler on the Roof from April 22nd through May 7th. I love that play. It's such a great musical. If you know it, of course you know it. If you don't know it, well, then why not? You should go see it. Fiddler on the Roof. Civic Theater is doing that up at the Center for the Performing Arts as well.
All right, Travis, you probably don't care about this next item, but
what?
You might. Methodist Hospital Task Corps is sponsoring the third annual Handbag Happy Hour. Do you need a new handbag?
I'll let you take this one, sure.
Okay. Michelle and I will go. It's at the Woodstock Club on April 21st from 6 to 8:30, and it's a silent auction of more than 80 designer vintage and gently used handbags with names like Louis Vuitton, Gucci, Tory Burch, Kate Spade, and as they say, many, many more. A wine pull raffle guarantees all participants a prize of one bottle of wine equal to the cost of the raffle ticket or maybe exceeding. And as they say, lots more fun features. And, you know, they're not saying guys can't go. Maybe guys want to win a fabulous or handbag for the lady in their life. You can find out more at eventbrite.bit.ly/1R83KAY.
What?
Yeah. Just go to Eventbrite and type in Handbag Happy Hour, and it'll get you there.
Sounds good. Hey, speaking of cool events at country clubs, at Meridian Hills Country Club, the annual Author's Breakfast, Hoosier Author's Breakfast, that is presented by the Dyslexia Institute of Indiana, is coming up on Saturday, April 30th, and featuring Shannon Lee Alexander, Tommy Allison, Dan Carpenter, James Cox, Darla Hall, Terry Hutchins, and Trey Mock, who will all be there talking about their books and signing their books, and there'll be a book sale, and Eric Halverson is the MC, and again, it all benefits Dyslexia Institute of Indiana on Saturday, April 30th, the Indiana Hoosier Authors Breakfast.
Fantastic. I have another theater entry for you. The Phoenix Theater this weekend opens another in its annual series of bilingual plays with performances some days in English, some days in Spanish. This year it's called
Leyenda.
Check the schedule just in case you're there on the wrong night. It's a live adaptation of Latino folk tales, and it's based on interviews with members of the Indianapolis Latino and Hispanic communities. So it's a contemporary interpretation of traditional folk tales that Brian Fonseca has put together that opens this weekend and runs through May 1st.
Very cool. Hey, last thing that I've got, more theater. The President Benjamin Harrison site is doing Mystery and Murder, presented by Candlelight Theater, and they are doing this now through the end of the month, and it is a fun mystery that you get to solve and be a part of that takes place in and throughout the Harrison's presidential site, which is a very cool thing to do.
Indeed. And my last item is, okay, so you've slaved over your taxes and you've talked about death at the Before I Die Festival, and now you want to treat yourself to something yummy. Don't forget, it's farmers market season. Well, most farmers markets go year-round, but fresh things are starting to pop up. And don't forget, if you slept in on Saturday and missed a farmers market, you can always catch the JCC farmers market on Sundays from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m.
Nice.
It's year-round. When it's nice, look for them outside. Otherwise, it's inside, and non-members are more than welcome to go to that.
There you go. And you can always learn more about other local arts events at indiearts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide website, or listen to us next week on that calendar we call
What'll We Do?
Now I want to take just a minute to remind you we are in the middle of our spring membership drive, and we would love to have you consider being a member, joining us in membership today, giving us a call at 1-800-233-0020 or logging on to WFYI.org. You are the public and public radio. You make this happen, and you make shows like The Art of the Matter happen. In fact, every time that you tune in, if you're a member, then you can say, I have made Art of the Matter happen. I've been a part of this. So give us a call, 1-800-233-0020, or log on WFYI.org. We are so fortunate that WFYI has been able to keep Art of the Matter on for over 16 years. And to have a one-hour long format weekly talk show about the arts is a pretty unusual thing and something you don't find on any other station. And Sharon and I are very grateful for your support. So please consider giving us a call today, 1-800-233-0020 or WFYI.org. And you can pledge at any amount that is comfortable for you. We just ask you to join us in that membership. And thank you for your support.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
The Arts Council of Indianapolis has been super busy creating programs to welcome race fans, put on a cultural race, survey people about the economic impact of arts in their lives, and ensure that all children get access to arts education. Sharon Gamble invited Arts Council of Indianapolis's president, Dave Lawrence, to tell us about these initiatives.
So I've lived in Indianapolis most of my life, and my visual for May is all those hand-painted signs that say welcome race fans, especially on the west side of town. But you and the Arts Council board and staff have reinvented that visual.
We absolutely have. You know, I grew up in Indianapolis as well, and around the month of May, you just see those signs everywhere, and they usually have a beer logo or something on them. And we thought, okay, what if we let artists sort of reinterpret that?
Yeah.
So we launched Welcome Race Fans, the Arts Celebrate the 100th Running, in conjunction with our friends at the Speedway. And we commissioned 33 artists to create these. And they were unveiled on March 31st in the Arts Garden.
Mm-hmm.
And they are making their way around town. So you'll see them all over the place. And there is a website where you can go to see them, Welcome Race Fans Indy. It's just a great way that we think that artists can celebrate all that is special about Indianapolis in the month of May.
One of the ways the Arts Council of Indianapolis and our community have set themselves apart is this insistence on art having a seat at the table when we're on a national stage. And I think it's not too strong a suggestion to compare this to the 46 for Super Bowl 46 a few years ago.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You know, in fact, we've sort of gotten a national reputation for this arts and sports infusion work that really started back in 2005 with the great work of the Indianapolis Cultural Development Commission mm-hmm. and work around the World Swimming Championships and the World Police and Fire Games and the NCAA Women's Final Four and the Men's Final Four just this last year and the Gymnastics Championships. And then even on the larger stage with 46 for 46 for Super Bowl 46 and now this. So, you know, I like the use of the word insistence because we really are insisting that we find ways to celebrate the enormous impact of the arts in Indianapolis and the strength of our arts community. We've got some wonderful artists and arts organizations here that deserve to be on the national spotlight. And so we work as hard as we can to find every opportunity to do that.
It's like the ancient custom or the ancient ideal of a sound mind and a sound body. You know, it takes arts and sports to make a well-rounded person, and
that's
we're right there.
We yeah. need it all in this city.
We absolutely do.
We are, you know, a world-class city, and that involves every aspect of it, including the arts. And the arts make, as I know all your listeners know, the arts make our lives more rich, and we want to share that with the world when they're here in May.
Absolutely. So back to the Welcome Race Fans artwork. I've seen a few of these. Some of them are whimsical. Are they all 2D or are there 3D?
There are 3D. There's one made of felt that's three-dimensional that is pretty impressive.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's great. Gary Schmidt is the artist. It's phenomenal. There's one made out of car parts. Todd Brasick is the artist. Again, three-dimensional. It's great. There's another one. Christopher Bowman made it all out of wood. And so there's 40-some little oil cans that line the top and bottom of this. And then he's put together some of it in a black and white checker. It's phenomenal. So, yeah, there's some photography, there's some 3D, and there's some traditional 2D painting as well.
And some of the artists maybe focused more on the word welcome than the idea of the race.
Right. You know, the only requirements that we had for the work is that they were all 4 feet long by 2 feet tall, and that the letters Welcome Race Fans had to be 6 inches or larger. And that was the only requirement we put on this because we really wanted to see what they came up with. So you're right. Some of them deal very specifically with the race, and there's race cars and, you know, images of the BorgWarner trophy and all of that. But some really take it in a completely different direction. And I absolutely love that.
There's one that has a little girl who's kind of jubilant. Tell us about that one.
Right. So that's artist Amy Reinhart, who's a Creative Renewal Fellow of the Arts Council. And she has on butterfly wings and an old-fashioned racing helmet and some party gloves, and she's welcoming the world. It's wonderful. Very, very well painted.
So how can people see these? They're moving around town as we speak.
That's right. They're going to be all over town. There are a number of places, including the Indianapolis Arts Garden, where you can go. There's going to be a whole series of posters. So if you're having a porch party this May, or if you're having friends over before the race, we've got probably 25,000 or more of these posters that are going to be out and around. Many different images of the original artworks will be on them. And the originals will be around town too. So they're going to be rotating, and you'll be able to find that location again at our website, either indiearts.org or the special website for this, Welcome Race Fans Indy.
And a lot of them you'll see as you walk into your favorite concert venue or art gallery.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
Or museum.
And especially on First Fridays, there's a couple of locations that are going to have just a bunch of them out and about. So May 1st Friday will be another great opportunity to see those.
This reminds me of the Big Red Arrow that used to move around back.
That's
back in
right.
The day.
That's yeah. right.
Now, this is one of the things we do well in Indianapolis is we come up with an idea and we hop on it and we say, how do we make it bigger? How do we segment it? How do we make it inclusive? And this Welcome Race Fans initiative is just one tiny tip of an iceberg that involves a bunch of different committees and activating kids and activating seniors and so forth. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So I serve as co-chair along with Kira Amstutz of Indiana Humanities for the Arts, Culture, and Youth Committee on the host committee for the 100th running. So there is actually, much like the Super Bowl 46 host committee, there is actually an entire host committee that has been put together for the 100th running. And it is mind-boggling how much is really going to be happening throughout the month of May. You will all know that the race is coming. If you didn't before, you will all know. And it's wonderful to see the community impact and all of these volunteers that have come together to really celebrate one of those things that makes Indianapolis so phenomenal. And I'm honored to be a part of it and thrilled to be able to bring the arts to the table in such a big and impactful way.
Fantastic. Speaking of racing, tell us about the Ultimate Adventure Race.
The Indy Ultimate coming up on Saturday, April 30th. Our good friends at the Indiana Sports Corps have done a remarkable job of showing off the city at every opportunity. And they brought us in early in the planning stages for this sort of city race where you can sort of do everything on your bucket list that you want to do to be a true fan of Indianapolis. So you want to kick a field goal at Lucas Oil Stadium, you're going to have that opportunity during the race. And it goes through all the sports venues and makes some stops at cultural venues as well, including, and we think this is the first in the country, racers will actually be racing through the Indiana State Museum. So folks are actually going to run through. And thanks to Tom King and the good folks at the State Museum for making this possible. And then we're really involved in the Last Leg Gallery is what we're calling that. And we're turning the canal into an outdoor art gallery all up and down it. There's going to be music and actors and fun things going along and lots of things to look at. So as folks are getting a little tired on that last leg of the race, there's going to be some all sorts of art stuff to keep them inspired and make them hit that finish line.
How many participants are we expecting?
Thousands. It's going to be great. Kicks off at 8 a.m. on Saturday the 30th.
Fantastic. Nice little nice little precursor to the mini.
That's right. It's 1 week before. And we, you know, I want to make sure that I thank the Central Indiana Community Foundation, who's presenting sponsor of this. They do such amazing things in the city. And to really help make this an even bigger thing, we're appreciative of their involvement in this as well.
And stay tuned. We'll remind you of where you can go to find out more about that. In a different kind of race, we're in a race for completely inclusive arts education for our kids. Tell us a little bit about where any given child stands right now. I think we're done with the research portion.
Yeah, so the first year, again, this is a partnership, a program of the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts. And there are three key partners in this, the Arts Council of Indianapolis, the mayor's office, and also IPS. And we are one of 20 cities nationally that has received this honor. And it's a 5-year intensive look at transforming the way that arts are delivered to every child in K through 8 in IPS. So this first year, and we have one meeting left in May where the folks from the Kennedy Center will be here, and we are finishing the research process, as you talked about. And from that, there will be some strategic goals that are identified. And year two, then an implementation team will take those and work them into some concrete programs and things that we can try in the schools to start making some of this happen. And that's years 2, 3, and 4 will be in sort of the implementation phase. And then year 5 is really going to look at, all right, now how do we sustain this? How do we keep this moving in the future? It's really exciting to see the number of people from all walks of life in Indianapolis that really believe that arts education is key to come together and put this together. We're really excited.
And one of the things I like about this initiative is that this isn't one of those deals where you sit back and go, okay, the Arts Council and the schools are on it. This is something where whether you have kids in IPS, whether you have kids at all,
right,
if you're a business person, if you're a citizen, you can be involved. There's something for you to do.
Absolutely. And there's, again, on our website, there's lots of ways that people can at least sign up for a newsletter and get information. But there will be ways that we will have that folks can really get involved, because this really is about the health and vibrancy of our city and our future. And we need to make sure that we're doing everything we can to help our children.
Mm-hmm. And last but not least, for now, because you have a lot of other irons in the fire as well, but a lot of our listeners have been someplace recently to a play, to a concert, to a museum, and they've gotten a survey to fill out. What's that about?
Right. So every 5 years, in partnership with our parent organization, Americans for the Arts, we do a study to ascertain the economic impact of the arts. It's called the Arts and Economic Prosperity Study. And we are doing field research right now for the fifth such study. The last one that came out in 2010 found that the arts in Indianapolis have an annual economic impact of $384 million. And that's just here in Marion County.
And that was still under the effects of a recession.
Correct. The study before that was, it was just under $500 million. So there was sort of a slide back, as one would assume, with the recession. But so we're anticipating a nice growth in the numbers this time. So, yes, 2016, we're doing a lot of field research, and that includes audience intercept surveys. So you will see a lot of volunteers at cultural institutions collecting these. I urge all of you to help us with that.
They're anonymous.
That's right, anonymous. And you'll have that opportunity to fill those out at intermission at shows. And that work really helps inform the larger picture of, you know, ancillary spending on events and all that that make up sort of that larger number.
So if you go out and you enjoy, or even if you don't enjoy the play you saw or the concert you saw, please fill out one of these.
Please,
because,
please.
Because you know you're going to go out to something you enjoy very soon. And
right.
This will help ensure the future of the arts.
Right. Because, you know, our elected officials and other folks are looking at these numbers very carefully. And this really means a lot when we can show the strength of our arts industry here in central Indiana and especially Marion County.
Sharon Gamble with Arts Council of Indianapolis President Dave Lawrence. Learn more about all of these initiatives at indiearts.org, again, indiearts.org. And you can find out how to get your free Welcome Race Fans poster at welcomeracefansindy.org. Again, welcomeracefansindy.org. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. I'll find out how the IMA is celebrating the state's bicentennial.
I've got a preview of this year's Stutz Artist Open House.
And I'll take a look at a T.C. Steele exhibit at the Indiana Historical Society, Indiana History Center, I should say. And we'll have that arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.